This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
April Atheists and Agnostics, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcoming you to Free Thought Radio.
April Atheists and Agnostics, AAA, non-believers. I'm Dan Barker, co-host of the show. I'm your friendly neighborhood, I've been called your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Free Thought Radio is produced once a week by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Annie Laurie Gaylor and I are co-presidents of FFRF, which is the nation's largest association of freethinkers, and freethinkers include atheists and agnostics. We are a watchdog to preserve the constitutional wall of separation between church and state and to educate the public about the views of non-theists. We have more than 17,000 members across the nation. 17,500 members nationwide. This is the weekend of April the 21st and 22nd, 2012.
And Free Thought Radio is broadcasting from Madison, Wisconsin, and podcasting everywhere.
Now, we're very happy to have with us on the phone a very special treat. His name is Paul Heffron. He's from Minnesota. He, like me, is a former minister. He's part of the Clergy Project, which we will talk about. He's also part of the Free Thought Band. And Paul was a preacher. I was a preacher. I used to go door-to-door preaching all the time. And that reminds me of the Jehovah's Witness joke. A Jehovah's Witness knocked on the door of a house, and a woman opened the door and said, "Oh, well, welcome. Why don't you come on in? We'll have some tea." So they came into the house, and they sat down and had some tea. And then she said, "Now, what would you like to talk about?" And the man had a confused look on his face, and he said, "I don't know. We've never got this far."
Now, we did forget to say that on the second half of today's show, we'll have another guest, someone whose name will go down in the legal history books as Debbie Weissman. She's now Debbie Weissman Chad. She was the teenager who was the student plaintiff in the famous Supreme Court case Lee versus Weissman, handed down in the early 90s. Declaring a prayer at graduation ceremonies, invocations and benedictions to be unconstitutional. And it's a monumental case, and we're going to catch up with Debbie. She was awarded the Freethinker of the Year by the Freedom From Religion Foundation with her family in the early 90s, and we haven't seen her since we saw her in San Antonio.
I think she was 17 when we met her.
And she was still in high school. And we're going to talk with Debbie about her case, what she's been doing since then, and also the Jessica Ahlquist case, and I know that Debbie provided some support in Jessica's prayer fight in Rhode Island.
Now, Paul's been holding on the phone here. Paul Heffron was a United Church of Christ minister in the 1960s. He left the church and the ministry after about 5 years and is now an outspoken non-believer with quite a story to tell. So, Paul, welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So, why did you go in the ministry in the first place, and then why did you leave?
I had a very good social experience in the church. I was in a liberal church, and I never had that much of a struggle with fundamentalism or orthodoxy, although I did at one stage. And then I went to a liberal education and liberal religion and to theology, and I just wanted to believe. I'd had a good experience in the minister and a camp director who were my heroes, were people that I wanted to be like. And I think the underlying idea that I had was that something that this word Christ represents means that you're going to become something special, something more like them. And so I thought I could be a minister. and have a big impact on people's lives for good like they did. And so I went to seminary wanting to believe, and I was there when the death of God theology was going on and all that radical theology, and somebody on the clergy project mentioned that recently, and I responded to that I was caught up in that whole movement of demythologizing, de-religionizing, de-supernaturalizing, and I just eventually I kept absorbing all this stuff and paying attention to my experience, and it just built up. In 1967, it all came to a head, and I was in my study at the church, and all of a sudden I stood up and said, God ain't doing a damn thing. Here I was, an English major, speaking like that. But I said it over and over. It would have been a funny sight to have seen. I stormed around the room just saying, God ain't doing a damn thing. It's like that phrase just summed up a whole lot of experience and study and reflection that had been going on for some years.
But that's no more crazy than standing up and walking around the room praying to this God. I mean, you were...
Oh, yeah, right.
You
that
were
would
make,
be even funnier.
you said that you wanted to believe. Did you ever actually really believe it, or were you one of those... Like, you know, I was an evangelical. We used to preach against you liberals as being lukewarm Christians. You have a form of godliness but deny the power. Did you actually ever really believe or feel anything, or were you just wanting to?
Well, I thought I did, but I think was really more a matter of wanting to believe and constantly trying to find a way and trying this and trying that and vacillating, actually, until I finally just, like in that moment, it just all came clear in a moment of recognition. There was no longer any back and forth or no longer any desire to try to find a way to believe or to try to make myself somehow a believer or somehow holding on to this idea that something would happen to me to make me something more. That's the whole idea of the Christian gospel, is that it's not going to leave you like you are. You're going to make something of you.
Something more than just a human being, then.
Yeah. And I think a key idea from Bonhoeffer was he was really turned off on this religious, the core idea of religion is that you are weak, you are lacking in ways, and therefore you have to turn to God for salvation. And that's what Christ is all about. And he rejected the whole scheme and tried to de-religionize. And I just realized myself, I've got to rely on my own strengths, and integrity, and rationality, and all these things that are potentially appealing to your strong points are there. And so that was what was at the turning point for me.
So what did you preach when you were a preacher? What did what were your sermons then?
Well, sometimes they would maybe fall into the... somebody in my church asked me, so, are you liberal or conservative? And I realized at that moment that, yeah, I probably keep them guessing because I was kind of ambivalent. One moment I would be trying to do the old liberal thing of finding rational explanations for things in the Bible, and finding good ethical messages. And other times I would be doing a Christmas sermon in which I would make it clear to them that all these Christmas stories are pure myth. They're not historical at all. And I can still remember a Sunday school teacher saying to me, so, oh, I always thought it happened just like that. And then I thought, yeah, but it's because the preachers didn't do the historical critical study of the Bible, didn't pass that on to the lay people. And I naturally had been to a seminary where you got all that historical critical stuff of the Bible, and you got all of the church history, but you could go on and find out how bloody awful it was, and all of the controversy in theology, and so at one time, but eventually my sermons were like humanist essays. And I would talk about the absence of God, and it's like a father who has withdrawn to let you come into your own, and messages like that. And I suppose nobody ever said anything, because it was kind of a typical, as you could put it, lukewarm, worldly type of congregation.
Yeah, I remember going through that phase myself where, you know, I wondered, you know, is the Bible really true? You know, the parables that Jesus told, he never expected them to be historical, real truths. He was just making up a story to teach a truth. So, so a lot of you and I went through that phase where we saw the Bible itself as, you know, the story of Adam and Eve, the story, you know, they were just stories made up by those people. By the way, do you hear some of the music? That's a little bit of the music of the Free Thought Band that is playing, and we're going to come back after the break and talk about what you're doing now. So we're talking with Paul Heffron, who is a former UCC minister. We'll be back after the break. I'm at Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
Did he ever return? No, he never returned. His second coming was never confirmed. They've been watching and waiting and even abstaining for the man return. Oh, the years went by and the centuries went by. He never came in all his glory in the sky. Viewed from below, it was a no-show from the get-go, and they never even knew the reason why. Did he ever return? No, he never returned. His second coming was never confirmed. They've been watching and waiting and even abstaining for the return.
And that's the Free Thought Band from Minnesota. And on the piano is Paul Heffron, who we are talking to on the phone today. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And excuse me, if you just tuned in, Paul Heffron is a former minister turned atheist. He was with the UCC ministry. Of course, that's the most liberal denomination. He says that he chose intellectual integrity and rationality. He then worked in administration. He earned a PhD at the University of Minnesota in American Studies. When there were no openings in teaching, he fell back on his avocation in music, and he's a member of many national free thought and humanist organizations since the 1980s. He's active with local groups, and he's a member of the Free Thought Band in the Twin Cities, Minnesota, which recently released a CD of mostly free thought music, and get this, it's available only from them at no cost. The idea is to help develop and use free thought music in all of the organizations in North America. And so we've been talking about the clergy project, why he left the church, and now I guess we're going to talk about free thought music.
So it's not mostly free thought music. It's all free thought music, but mostly original free thought music. So, Paul, you I looked up your membership and the foundation. You know, you joined us in 1989?
Yes. Remember after that you came out to speak and play and sing for us here, and that was an inspiration for me, which I think had a lot to do with our forming a Free Thought Band and doing a CD and my trying to write this Free Thought music.
Okay, we want to play one of the songs, a couple of the songs, but tell us a little bit about this Friendly Atheist T-shirt, and then we'll listen to the song.
Well, that uses the tune High Heel Sneakers, and the idea of it is that we're putting on the atheist T-shirt to going out tonight or the humanist necklace, and I wanted to sort of celebrate our sense of coming out and our strength and our assertion, but at the same time was a little bit of a spoof on ourselves because we kind of overdo it sometimes, some of us, and it was a little bit of a satire maybe also of those that we run into who have trouble with openly atheist secular humanist people.
So here's the Free Thought Band performing Friendly Atheist T-Shirt.
Get out your friendly atheist T-shirt, 'cause we're going out tonight. Get out your friendly atheist T-shirt, 'cause we're going out tonight. You better wear your thinking cap, in case some fundy wants to fight. Put on your happy humanist necklace for every person that we meet. Put on your happy humanist necklace for every person that we meet. So when the Mormons see us coming, they'll keep peddling down the street. Symbol, bumper sticker in plain sight. Slap on that Darwin fish symbol, bumper sticker in plain sight. And if they trash your Subaru, never mind, they'll see the light.
Well, Paul, that's you on the piano, isn't it? You're quite the you're quite the piano player. You've managed to make a life. You found a new ministry, I guess, a ministry in something real, music. So,
yes.
Am I right that people can get this for free, or is that wrong? People can get this album. How do they get it?
Well, we've been playing and developing music for about a dozen years, and playing for our banquets and solstice parties and picnics and so forth, and we finally reached a point where we said we should record some of our things, and we had the idea that we would try to do it as a project to help promote free thought music or the development of free thought music in free thought groups throughout the country, and so we decided that we would just we did that. We were able to do our own recording, thanks to Jerry Rouser, our leader, and all the things that he has wherewithal, and Jordan and his our vocalist and his talent, and we just have spread the word that we're willing to give these away. There's no charge.
Well, how can we get it? How can somebody get the album? How can somebody get the album?
How can someone get it? Well, they just contact us, and we're mailing it out, and we've been doing that, and we're trying to reach local groups through the national organizations.
So there's an email.
Want me to give my address, email address and yeah. phone number, or do you want them to just contact FFRN?
No, I see on the album it says contact Jerry Rauser, J-R-A-U-S-E-R, at yeah. comcast.net. Jerry's one of the musicians, too. Well, we're out of time, darn it. I wanted to play some more of your music. A former minister, Paul Heffern, we're talking to, who wrote a song on the album called Good Without God, which is quite a song to hear. The lyrics of a former preacher saying, you can be good without God. So, Paul, well, thank you so much for being a guest on our show today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. Coming up, we have Debbie Weissman, who won a Supreme Court decision as a 17-year-old, stopping unconstitutional prayer at high school graduations in the 1990s, and we'll catch up with her and talk about the current state of the law and what it's like to be a victor, such an important victor of a Supreme Court case.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, over the wall come a tumbling down.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have with us on the phone from Boston somebody who has fought the battle of church and state and won at the Supreme Court level, and that's a rarefied circle of people. We're very pleased after many, many years to make contact again with Debbie Weissman, who is now Debbie Weissman Classy, and she was the teenage plaintiff in a major Supreme Court case, Lee versus Weissman, in 1992, resulting in a firm, resounding decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that there should not be graduation prayers during commencements at high school. And it's a monumental case. And we've caught up with her a little bit because of Jessica Alquist. She happened to come down there to support Jessica. In Rhode Island. And we had friends of friends. And we have found out that Debbie graduated from Rhode Island College in 1998. She spent a year studying abroad in Wollongong, Australia, where she met her husband, and they were married in 1999. And she and Ben have moved to Boston, where he works in physics, and she is in sales, and has her. You have your own business now, Debbie, right?
I do. Thanks.
Well, why don't just tell us about it? You're a woman entrepreneur.
Yeah. So I worked with a concierge service for 9 years and was management there, and it catered to an elite high-end clientele, and I loved it. I'm really passionate about great customer service. I think it matters, even though, not as much as a lot of other jobs, but I do think it matters. And decided to venture out on my own. I have a weird, weird passion for gift wrapping. It's bizarre, but I love doing it. And I've done it for friends and family for years, and I've been told for years I should do it for a living, and thought, what an odd thing, you can't do that for a living, and decided to try. So I have a gift wrap service where I come to you and gift wrap, or I can pick it up and deliver to the recipient gift wrapped, and that will be branching out to personal assistant services in May.
Well, you do know that in order to be a good gift wrapper, you have to be able to think outside the box.
That's true. Nice segue. I like it.
Now, what's the name of your business?
It's called Present Moment Studio.
And then what does that mean that you'd be branching out to personal assistance? What kind of services will that be?
Basically any time saver, as long as it's legal. so it can be anything from errands to data entry to filing to just organizing, even organizing somebody's life. That's done a lot. Just all those little things that kind of add up in your day and takes away from the most important part of your day, such as your career and your family and your friends. So to kind of help people have more time.
Well, you sound like a very useful person, and you were, this is quite a, I mean, it's a very non-controversial kind of business to go into after your very controversial teenage experiences. So that might be nice for you. But can we talk about the case and what how it started?
Can I say something first?
Oh, sure.
I remember when you came to speak to our group in San Antonio in 1992, you and your family, very brave, very powerful story. You were 17, I think, and you were excited about all the issues, but you were especially excited because as a 17-year-old, there was an article about you in 17 magazine, and your eyes just lit up. You were being read all over the country. So
yeah, they actually invited me to write an article. So I had a little article that I wrote in there, which was, it was interesting. It was fun. I enjoy writing. But what it really did is it introduced me to a lot of friends, especially, you know, I got to college and girls in my dorm had read it and came up to me. And that was, it's always nice when it's easier to meet people who have the same beliefs as you.
Well, that was the mass media. Now, this case started, we met your family and they came, you were kind enough to accept the Free Thinkers of the Year Award. But this started with your older sister, didn't it?
It did. Well, and it was really kind of you to offer us the award, I have to say. Yeah, it started at my sister's eighth grade graduation from a public school in Providence, and that was in 1986. And that's when they asked, during an invocation or benediction, the priest or minister, asked everybody to stand up and thank Jesus Christ for the accomplishments of the students. And I remember the moment really clearly. I was already at a stage where I wasn't saying the Pledge of Allegiance when the rest of the class did. So I was very uncomfortable, and I, even at that young age, wasn't going to stand up, but looked to my parents, and they stood up, and they looked really shocked and confused, but they stood up, so I stood up with them, thinking, okay, it's a respect thing. And then, you know, that kind of led to a complaint, and it snowballed a bit from there.
And your parents were Jewish?
Yes, our family's Jewish. So what's interesting about that is then 3 years later, at my eighth grade graduation from the same school, my parents went to the school in advance and said, we remember this happened in 86. We're hoping it doesn't happen again. It's unconstitutional. And they said to my parents, don't worry, Mr. and Mrs. Weissman, we got you a rabbi.
Now,
so completely missing the point.
Right. Now, you and I and half of our listeners get it right away. What's wrong with that?
Right.
But let's explain it, just in case.
Sure. So the easiest way to explain it is, if we were uncomfortable having somebody else's religion forced on us, in what way would we be comfortable forcing our religion on other people?
Exactly.
It's absurd. It's rude. It's still unconstitutional. It's not about having your religion, you know, endorsed by the school. It's about having no religion endorsed by the school.
They thought they were going to get rid of troublemakers by, oh,
exactly.
Okay, let's give them a rabbi. They're Jewish, and then they'll go away.
Right. Right, well, to shut us up.
And that did not happen, right?
It enraged my parents even further. And they continued the conversation and explained their point of view. And the school said, you know what, it's tradition, and if you don't like it, sue us. And my parents hadn't really considered that option. So it was ironic that they were the ones who suggested it. And
famous last words, be careful what you say.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I remember your dad telling us that...
Daniel, right?
Daniel.
Yeah.
The family is Jewish and very proud of a Jewish heritage. But he said, for us, the religious stuff and the belief, it wasn't that important. For us, he said, Passover meant pass the food over.
Sounds like my dad. Yeah, for us, we're cultural Jews. And I won't speak for my family, but for myself, I'm an atheist Jew, which is a lot of people think is a contradiction, but it's not. It's very common where you connect with the cultural side and the history of Judaism, which is very rich, but not the God part of it and you know, some of the fairy tales, in my opinion.
And
so, yeah, we do acknowledge Passover, and we tell the story of it, but we're not thanking God. We're thanking our ancestors, so to speak, for, you know, taking on the fight.
Now, speaking of the fight, how soon after being challenged to sue did your family sue? And didn't you work with the ACLU?
Absolutely. We worked with the Rhode Island ACLU. And it was pretty immediate where the ACLU on our behalf asked for an injunction of the rabbi to do the benediction invocation. And we were turned down with the judge saying that he doesn't do fast food law, which is appropriate. You know, you shouldn't. You should really think about the issues as a judge. So we were fine with that. And, you know, there he was. Rabbi Gutterman was at my eighth grade graduation. And, you know, the fight just continued. We won on the first level, and the school decided to appeal, and we won again, and they decided to appeal again, and we won at the U.S. Supreme Court level. And really, they just wasted a lot of money. They really wasted a lot of money.
Now, what year did that lawsuit get started?
So, officially started in 1989.
So, it really was pretty fast-tracked there.
Yeah, we won the Supreme Court in 92.
So, that meant that you won in time to make sure that there was not religion and prayer at your high school graduation. Is that right?
Yes, I did. And what's funny is I should have graduated in 93, so there actually was some media at that graduation looking for me. I was already in college. I graduated in 92. So, yeah, it was nice that wasn't an issue at my graduation at all.
Now, you fast-tracked yourself. We're almost out of time, but I just one more question before we go for the break.
Sure.
And that is that this was occurring in Providence. We've all been treated to this terrible treatment of Jessica Alquist earlier this year in a smaller community in Rhode Island. What kind of flack did you get?
Yeah, it's really completely different today. This makes me sound so old, which I am. But, you know, we didn't have internet. We didn't have cell phones with text messaging. We didn't have that. So we would have, you know, crank calls, and we would just screen them and get lots of nasty calls. And we got lots of hate mail, snail mail. A lot of it, which was nice, my parents could shield me from. I didn't see it till I was older. They saved everything, and I saw some nasty stuff when I was older. And that's not possible today. You can't shield Jessica or anybody from the internet or their cell phone. It's a completely different atmosphere, but on a positive side as well, it's completely different in that she's gotten support from all over the world. It's so easy to reach out to somebody and say, I believe in what you're doing and thank you, just as easy as it is to say horrible things. But to specifically answer your question, you know, we got everything from Hitler should have finished the job.
Wow.
And we got called the N-word, which I think is always bizarre. Just all kinds of horrific, horrific things. Lots of, you know, my favorite, you know, you're going to burn in hell. And you want to say, you know, Jews don't believe in hell, so it's kind of an empty threat, but thanks. Lots of that stuff.
Did your parents make a count of the mail that you got?
Yeah, they kept it all, and they reported all of it to the FBI. And
many letters?
Sorry, that kind of count. I don't know. I really don't know.
But I cut you off. Some of it was so threatening that it was reported to the FBI.
Yeah, and there was one guy who for years, even after the case was decided, every major Jewish holiday, he would buy a Hallmark card for it, cross out all the nice words, put swastikas. For years, I'm like, get a life, guy. And this guy, the FBI said, oh, yeah, without his name being signed, no return address, obviously, the FBI looked at it and said, we know who this guy is.
Really?
We're talking with Deborah Weissman, now Deborah Weissman Classy, about her 1992 significant Supreme Court victory, overturning and outlawing prayers at graduations. We'll continue talking with her after the break. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I especially want to talk about this argument that the court raised about coercion. So stay tuned for more of Free Thought Radio.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and on the phone with us, we're so delighted to have a reunion with Debbie Weissman Classy, who is the classy teenager of yore who was the main plaintiff in a landmark case by the Supreme Court saying you cannot pray at kids during their high school graduation.
The case was Lee versus Weissman. You've seen that name. in 1992. So, Debbie, I know the other side was arguing that there was no constitutional violation here because it was voluntary. You were not coerced to go to your high school graduation and that you didn't have to pay attention to the prayer. And I know what you think about that, but I was glad to see that in the Supreme Court decision, Justice Kennedy surprised everyone by totally smashing this idea that that there was no coercion involved.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about that is we've learned from his biography and some other biographies about him that he wasn't going to vote that way. It was as he was writing the majority decision for the other side that he changed his own mind. He was writing it and realized this isn't right. It is coercion in a different way. And he changed his vote by writing the decision, and we wouldn't have won had he not done that. So it's pretty impressive.
He wrote, "It is a cornerstone principle of our Establishment Clause jurisprudence that it's no part of the business of government to compose official prayers for any group of the American people to reside as a part of a religious program carried on by government." And that's what these school officials attempted to do.
Right, right, exactly. And what's kind of disappointing about it is that's why they draw the line at high school, so public colleges can have prayers at their graduation, because at that point you're an adult and it's not quite the same.
Yeah,
coercion.
Although we have been successful in stopping. I mean, it was one of the first things that the Freedom From Religion Foundation did. I was a sophomore, and this is going to date me, 1976, and I complained about graduation prayers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and the senior class officers agreed with me. The chancellor agreed, and they dropped a tradition of over 100 years, and
That's
nobody
amazing.
Missed it. So
right.
We can still argue the same principle, but also one of my favorite lines, or I think one of the important points that Kennedy made was, he said, "Attendance may not be required by official decree, yet it is apparent that a student is not free to absent herself from the graduation exercise in any real sense of the term voluntary. For absence would require forfeiture of those intangible benefits which have motivated the student through youth and all her high school years." And that is exactly right. Why should you be penalized? Because
right.
You want to avoid religion.
Exactly. And, you know, there, as a culture in this country, graduations are a very important part of your education journey. It's not, you know, I know other countries, they don't make a big deal of graduations, but we do. And in that way, it's, you know, it's not coercion, you don't have to be there, but you should get to be there. It's important. And it would really be unfortunate if people who were uncomfortable stopped going.
Yeah, you're not a persona non grata. You shouldn't be at your own graduation.
Besides, credit should go where credit is due. You've worked really hard. You've studied. You passed the test. You graduated. And now somebody's getting up there giving all the credit to somebody else's God.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I couldn't agree more. That's exactly how I feel.
Now, during the break, we asked if there was anything particular we should be sure to cover, and you wanted to say something about Jessica Ahlquist.
Yeah, so one thing I've said to her directly, but I haven't gotten to really say publicly is that what I admire most about her from the very beginning, and what's really different about my case and hers, was from the get-go she said, "I'm atheist." And we said we're Jewish because we were, but we never said we're atheist. And that's so brave, and it's unfortunate that it's brave. It shouldn't be a big deal at all, but in this country it really is. And for her, as a teenager, even as an adult, it would be impressive. As a teenager, to say that and say that with pride, I just admire her. I really do. I think she's very brave, and I'm thankful for her. I think she, I know, speaking to other teenagers, she opened doors for other teenagers to say the same thing. So,
now you did you testify? Did you drive down from Boston? And I know you met Jessica and gave her support.
Yeah, it was nice. Steve Brown, the director of the Rhode Island ACLU, put me in contact with Jessica before there was too much publicity, but she was already getting a lot of negative, communication from people in her school and her city, and asked me to kind of connect with her. And so we began emailing quite a while ago, which was great. And yes, during her case, I drove down, so I got to the hearing. I didn't testify. The judge did mention that I was there, which was really funny. You know, there are reporters there, and they're looking around to find me, and they don't know what I look like, so I was looking around, too. But I will support her. Any chance I get, I go to Rhode Island to support her.
Well, she has a victory. They decided not to appeal, so.
Yes, we're talking about the prayer banner case in Rhode Island.
And I was there for that hearing, the school board hearing as well, and well, I had a speech written.
You had a big role in that. I mean, the Lee versus Weissman, great precedent. We're out of time. Thank you so much for everything you've done for State Church Separation and for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We want to thank Ben Yonke for engineering and producing our show today. This show was produced in Madison, Wisconsin. Find out more about the show at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org. Join us right away at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Ask for a sample copy of our March newspaper. We have lots of information in it about Jessica and other state church issues. And tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.